do you know that you have found the church? And what is the church? Is there one true church? And what does it mean to say that we are the Catholic Church? All questions that in one way or another are kind of raised often, I think, in our lives. And I'm especially interested in how, when I talk with our Protestant brothers and sisters, I was surprised to find that they use the exact same creed we do and say that they believe in one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. I'm like, I thought you didn't like the Catholic Church. No, we mean it differently. We mean Catholic and that there's this kind of universal idea of a church, but it's invisible. An invisible idea of a Catholic Church. It's an interesting idea to think that, okay, there is such a thing as a Catholic universal church, but it's invisible. Well, I think if we look at our readings today, especially our first reading, we find that it doesn't quite work to say that the church is invisible. We read about St. Paul going to all these very specific towns. Good job by the lector reading all those Greek towns in Greece and such, and Turkey. And Paul's going all around, and he establishes actual tangible communities in these places. Enough that he goes, and then it says he goes back and he visits them. And today it says that he even sets up presbyters, presbyteroi in Greek, from where we get our modern English word priest. Literally, it says Paul establishes a community. He sets a priest in charge over them. Notice it's not even that the community kind of decides who they want to be in charge. It says Paul establishes a priest for them. They lay hands on them, it tells us elsewhere, ordaining them. And then Paul can go away. When he comes back, he calls the church together. They're all able to assemble, and they know who they are and that they're part of the church. They meet at a specific place. They receive Paul's letters and even maintain them over the course of the years so that we have them today. All this sounds very much like a visible, tangible kind of church. If you went to these Greek towns that are mentioned, you could ask, where's the church? And they'd tell you, well, they meet in so-and-so's house on the Lord's Day on Sunday, and you're welcome to come and join with us, and we're going to celebrate the Eucharist and read the Scriptures. Lots of times people want to go back to the way it was in the early church, so to speak. We do that every Sunday. We gather as the church. You can find us. We're visible and tangible. I'm reminded of a story that was told to me about the missionary spreading of the church, particularly in the country of Japan. It always kind of amazed me to think, how did the church get to Japan? Well, of course, missionaries went there eventually, and they taught the people about Jesus and his church, and surprisingly, many people converted and became Catholic in Japan. But eventually, the emperors became hostile to our Catholic faith there. And we have the great stories of the martyrs of Japan, the martyrs of Nagasaki, and their death for the faith. And eventually, the priest got completely kicked out. But as they were leaving, they promised that one day we will be back. And they promised their little community that don't panic, one day priest will return. But the people asked them, well, how will we know that the people that might come in the future, how will we know that they're really us? How will we know that they're part of the church? Well, the missionaries told them, you'll be able to tell when they come because, first of all, they will have a great love of the Eucharist, just as we've taught you. Secondly, they will have a great love of our Blessed Mother, Mary. Third, they will, if they're like us, they will be unmarried. They'll be celibate. And finally, that you can ask them who the head of their church is, and they will point to the Bishop of Rome, the Pope. He said, when they come, you will know they are the true church when they teach these things. Well, unfortunately, it was much longer than anybody had expected before the priest could get back into Japan, and several generations had died and gone, and by the time it was once again safe for missionaries to go back to Japan, obviously most people thought that after hundreds of years, It's not likely that we're going to find, you know, anybody Christian left in Japan, considering the persecution. We're basically having to start over. But when they showed up, they found that people were coming to them asking, "Are you the ones that were foretold?" Like, "Well, I don't know. What do you mean?" "Well, do you celebrate any kind of special day?" "Well, sure, we gather every Sunday and we celebrate what we call the Eucharist." "Oh, and do you reverence any particular saints or anything?" "Well, in addition to Jesus, we have a great love for especially his mother, Mary." "Oh, well, are you married?" Well, "No, we're not. We've given up marriage to point others to heaven." "Well, and finally, are you like head of your church, or do you report to somebody, or who's like the head of your group?" "Well, we have a special priest in the city of Rome who we call the Pope, who is the head of our church." And at that, they found that thousands of people came out of hiding, approached these priests and said, "We're the church. We've been waiting for hundreds of years. Our fathers, our grandfathers have told us the stories that one day you would come. And now we know that you're here." And they were surprised to see that the church had survived underground in Japan for over 100 years, waiting for the return of the priests to lead them. They were visible, tangible. When it came time, they could ask, "Where's the church?" And they could come together. We are not just some invention, not even just something invisible, but something concrete, tangible that has survived for 2,000 years, established by Jesus. Now, it's very popular today to say that, "Well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious." After Catholicism, one of the largest denominations of people are people who claim that they're nothing. "Oh, I'm spiritual," a lot of them will say, "I believe in God, but I don't belong to any church or any concrete structure. I don't need all that stuff." Well, why is that? Why would we want to have this idea of an invisible church in the first place? Well, I think probably in our day, there are two reasons that I see. One is that a visible, divinely appointed church with leaders and a hierarchy established by God might just have some things to say about how I'm living my life. Maybe they might ask me to change. Maybe to belong to this church, I'd have to actually conform my life to God's plan as manifest through this church. So it's much more convenient to just say, "Well, sure, I believe in God, but I mean, not in any concrete sort of way," because that allows us to just do what we want to then. We could say, "Sure, I believe in God," but and then just go on doing whatever we want to in our lives. And that sounds really attractive, but the problem is we never get holy. We never grow. To grow, we have to change sometimes in ways that we don't want to. And it means that somebody's got to point it out to us. And we know that that is part of the church, to help people to grow in holiness, sometimes even when we don't realize maybe we're not quite on the right path. But secondly, and I think maybe this is even more important, the reason why we want an invisible church is because we look at the actual church and it's got all these problems. You know, it's nice to see that St. Paul establishes priests in these little towns, but if we look at the church today, well, as soon as you create a hierarchy and divinely appointed leaders and such, it's not too hard to point out, well, they're not doing so good. You know, I mean, if God appointed him, goodness sake, couldn't he have picked somebody better than this? You know, we look and we see these so-called leaders and this so-called church is full of sinners, not doing so well. Wouldn't it be easier to kind of keep an invisible, perfect church in our mind? See, that's the benefit of having a church that doesn't really exist. In your mind, you could say, well, it's just perfect. Truth is, the real, actual, concrete, visible church that exists is not perfect. From the Pope right on down to the lowest person, we're all just a bunch of sinners. I mean, we get it wrong over and over. We've had great popes, but we've had some real scoundrels. The first pope didn't do so well at his first test, denied that he even knew Jesus. So it's not like it's something new that the church has had problems. If we can look at the church today and say, yes, there are lots of problems, that's not an excuse then to say that, well, this isn't the true church. And in fact, it's probably all the more reason to say, I know I've found the right church, because after 2,000 years of the bunch of people that have run it and been part of it, and there is no reason why the church should still exist today if this were just merely a human collection of people. You know, it's said that Napoleon came to the church and said, I will destroy your church. And the head of the church at that spot said, look, if we haven't been able to destroy ourselves in these thousands of years, you're certainly not going to be able to do it. And I think that gives us all a little bit of confidence. First of all, we're welcome here. Because most of us, if we really look deep down, we know we're not so spotless and perfect. And the church is always meant to be more of a hospital for sinners than it is some museum for saints. But that means that we have to bear with one another's faults, with the faults of the church. Every time we see some priest or bishop or even a pope doing something that they shouldn't, it's not an excuse to say, well, the church is a failed project. Rather, it's a chance to put our faith in God again and say, God, it's your church. You're in charge. You're going to make this work. You've been doing it for 2,000 years. The problem here is that we're looking at the church as we see it right now. But the church isn't even just a 2,000-year-old institution. It is God's plan for this world, for the rest of creation. St. John, in our second reading, gives us the beautiful example of where we're headed. There will be a day when this church is perfect. Problem is, that's the last day. That's heaven. God sees us from that perspective, and he's able to say, I saw the church, the new heavens, the new earth coming down like a bride, pure and spotless, adorned for her husband. That's how God sees us, because he knows that's how it ends up. Now, in the midst of it, we've got lots we can point to say things aren't going so well. But you know what? Our gospel today, I think, gives us the biggest key. More than any of the external kind of things, like, yes, we have the Eucharist and the priesthood and we love our Blessed Mother and the Holy Father. Those are all good, and they're marks that point us to the church. But St. John in our gospel today tells us probably the most important thing. He says, you will know my disciples. You will find my church, especially by looking at how they love one another. Now that's beautiful, but also a lot less tangible. What does that mean? Well, if people came to our church today, would they recognize that we're Jesus' church by how we love one another? The way we care for not just the people who come to this building every week, but the poor around us? Do we care for those most in need? How well do we do loving one another? That's probably the most important way that you can find Jesus' church. And that's why even outside the visible bounds of the Catholic Church, we can look and say that we can find little signs of the church all over the place. And the truth is, while the Catholic Church has the fullness of truth, there's plenty of truth to be found amongst our Protestant brothers and sisters, amongst even non-Christians. In some way, when we're trying to love God, that's a sign of the church. How well do we do it here at Cure of Ars? I wonder, would people know us as the church by how we love one another? You all know that I love the liturgy, especially the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass here. And that's the highest, most important thing that we do. But do we love one another outside of this building? Would people know that we're Catholic even when we're not here at Cure of Ars? I think maybe that's the most important test for us as the church. Because while it's beautiful that we come here and we celebrate the Eucharist, and yes, it's our highest form of prayer, perhaps the highest form of work that we do is out in the world, loving one another, caring for our brothers and sisters, caring for each other. We pray that although we are imperfect now, that we might get better, that we would grow in holiness through the gift of our church, and that we might be an effect on the world that people could look at us and say, see how they love one another. I want to be part of that. And then we can lead them to all the teachings and the doctrines. Our job is to help people fall in love with Jesus. It's no mere coincidence that people are knocking on our door all the time at the rectory. Many people who aren't Catholic, but they know that we'll help them. Sometimes I admit I can get a little annoyed when everyone's knocking on the door and, hey, I want some money. Okay, well, let's talk about Jesus. You know, it's an opportunity, but people know us. We're visible. We're tangible. It also means that we're on for it. People are going to look at us and say, how are you doing? And they're going to be pointing out when we're not doing so well. It's okay. Our challenge today is to go out and be that visible sign of God's love in the world. We've got the model today as we gather around the Eucharist. Jesus loved perfectly, laid down his life for his brothers and sisters. He calls us now to go out and do the same, that people might look at us and say, that must be the church, because look at the way they love one another.